Our series, Meet Your Mind, A User's Guide to the Science of Consciousness, is supported by Promega Corporation, providing tools and technologies for research in life science, and the Knorr Foundation, exploring meaning and commonality of human experience.
Can you actually see creativity in the brain? Turns out you can if you put a living, breathing human being inside a brain imaging machine. That's one of the tools that scientists use to see which parts of the brain light up during a burst of creative insight. Some of the most fascinating work on the science of creativity is coming out of the lab of Rex Jung, a neuroscientist at the Mind Research Network in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We'll talk about his research in a minute, but I had a more basic question to start with. What exactly is creativity?
Production of something both novel and useful. So creativity isn't one thing. It's at least two, if not more.
Like so many things, it can't be just something new. You know, wearing a left orange sock and a right white sock is sort of new, maybe. But it's not very useful.
Exactly. It may be novel, but not particularly useful.
Well, what's fascinating about the research that you've been doing is that you are able to look at what's happening in the brain when we talk about creativity. Is it really possible to figure out which specific parts of the brain are linked to creativity?
It was somewhat surprising when we started doing this research. I've previously done research in intelligence. In that area of brain research, it's really a story of more is better, whether it's brain tissue or wiring of the white matter connecting up different regions of the brain. More is better, more activation associated with intelligence. But with creativity, when we started to look at our data, something very surprising emerged. When we had our college subjects performing these tasks, less was better. They had lower levels of cortical thickness, lower white matter integrity, these wires that connect different networks of the brain, associated with better performance on our measures of creativity. It was very surprising.
I think a lot of people have heard of gray matter, not least because of Agatha Christie's Poirot, but what is what is white matter?
So the gray matter is the thinking, the computational parts on the surface of the cerebral cortex, and these are analogous to the computers like sit on your desk. The white matter is analogous, I guess, to the wires that connect your computers to the internet. The white matter is myelinated axons. This is a fatty sheath that insulates the axons, the wires, to allow electrical impulses to travel from one place to another throughout the brain. This is the way the brain communicates and allows information to transfer from one place to another. So the gray matter is the thinking part, if you will. The white matter is the transfer of information part. And these are the two major components of the brain structure.
Is part of what's going on that the more heavily sheathed gray matter speeds things up so that you can get straight to the useful end, whereas the less myelinated sheath allows diversion, slower thought?
It's possible.
Is it possible that creativity is simply a matter of thinking about things with less direction?
Yeah, I've used the analogy of taking the side roads as opposed to the main highways. You're taking side roads and perhaps even dirt roads to get to the destination. You might see some more interesting things along the way, but you could be going full tilt in that direction down the dirt road, not quite knowing where you're going. It's not necessarily slower. It's just less of a direct path to some destination.
Is this similar at all to what we all think of as the aha moment? You weren't thinking about that, and all of a sudden you see the problem in a new light?
Yeah, this aha moment is the phenomena of the subconscious neuronal activity being made conscious. There's a constant cacophony of neural activity that's going on outside of our conscious awareness, but things are going on in our brain and in our mind that is not in the spotlight of our attention or the spotlight of our mind's eye.
How do you study this? I mean, I've had a few aha moments in my life, and I can tell you I didn't know they were coming.
People do study the aha moment, and we do study creativity, and we do this in very funny ways with very what sounds like silly measures. For example, looking for novelty, we measure with something called divergent thinking. And divergent thinking is giving people some common object and having them think of as many novel uses as they possibly can. These tests have been around since the 1950s, and it goes something like this. Tell me as many creative ways you can think of to use a brick. So it's a very common object, and you start to say, well, you can build a house, you can use it as a doorstop, you can use it as a mock coffin at a Barbie funeral. Well, that last one is different from the former ones, and like your sock example, it may be novel but not creative. When you get to the aha moment, there are methods called remote associates tests. So you give three words like mine, lick, and shaker. And you are to think of one word that binds them together into compound words.
Salt, is that what we're looking for?
Exactly. Salt mine, salt lick, and salt shaker. And it tends to pop into your head, not through a process of elimination, but through that moment of insight, that aha moment.
What about genius? Are the brains of geniuses wired differently from the brains the rest of us work with?
Probably. I've only met, you know, maybe one genius in my life. They're very rare. But genius is really the exquisite interplay of intelligence and creativity. I would guess you have such exquisitely well-developed knowledge acquisition capabilities and novelty generation and usefulness generation capabilities that we call it genius. It's something unique in the world. I think we overuse that term, but genius is relatively rare because you have the more is better phenomenon of high intelligence and the less is better phenomenon of high creativity manifested in the same brain at very extreme levels.
One of the things that people fear, I think, and so bring it up all the time, is that there is a link between creativity and mental illness. Mm-hmm. Do you see such a link?
We set out to disprove some of the myths that we thought existed. But again, something surprising happened, and we needed to follow the data. We found something surprising, that the region in which our subjects had lower fidelity, if you will, of white matter was precisely the same region that subjects, patients with bipolar disorder and schizophrenia had lower white matter fidelity. And these were subjects that performed high on our creativity measures. So there might be a continuum of creativity and psychopathology, what others have hypothesized. And psychosis might be an overshoot of something that is evolutionarily useful, like creativity. Why does psychosis and psychopathology persist in the gene pool when it's such a devastating disorder socially and interpersonally and occupationally? It may be because creativity is so highly valued evolutionarily that there's occasionally overshoots into psychosis.
Rex Young is a professor of neurosurgery at the University of New Mexico and a research scientist at the Mind Research Network in Albuquerque.